For KOSU News, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. A bill protecting the controversial practice known as gay conversion therapy is heading to the full House after passing committee. The author, Representative Sally Kern, says it keeps the choice in parents' hands. Ryan, what do you think about this?
I think this is a dangerous and an unprecedented piece of legislation that grants these individuals that engage in this so-called therapy a blank check for the most part to do so without any oversight or any regulation by the state of Oklahoma. I think we need to be very clear that this practice is currently allowed in Oklahoma. There's no movement to ban it, although if there were, I would certainly be behind that. But there's no movement to ban it. What this bill would do would be to largely remove this therapy from regulation. And let's make no mistake about it. This therapy, or so-called therapy, is rejected by almost every mainstream, or it is rejected by every mainstream medical association out there, pediatric psychologists, psychiatrists. And telling of that is none of those individuals or organizations were allowed to testify at the committee hearing, and none of the survivors of this so-called therapy were allowed to testify. Now that this bill's made it through the sideshow of Representative Kern's committee, it'll be very telling to see whether or not Speaker Hickman grants it a hearing on the House floor.
Neva, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, let's talk about where it goes from here. I think it very well may get a hearing on the House floor, may get a vote. I think it's much tougher sledding on the Senate side, where I would be surprised if it gets any hearing at all. So I think basically we've still got some give and take in the discussion and debate on this, but really it's going nowhere in terms of anything legislatively. But the bottom line to the bill, really, as Representative Kern pointed out, was that it was a preemptive strike against what is a national movement that would prohibit this type of therapy. And really her point, I think, that is central to the whole argument, in my point of view, is about parental rights and the fact that it protects therapists who are currently offering the counseling. So, you know, we can debate all of the other, you know, elements to it, but in terms of the legislation itself, again, I think it got sidelined with the larger discussion on, you know, whether or not this therapy should be in place at all, and the proponents and opponents on both sides.
And I think, you know, the opponents of the bill are all for parental rights, but parents don't have the right to abuse their children. And when you look at the harms that this type of counseling imposes upon the subjects, you know, that's undisputable. You know, this increases the likelihood of anxiety, depression, self-harm. It creates the idea that being gay or lesbian or bisexual or having a gender identity issue whenever you're a minor is somehow abnormal, and it's just not. And if we treat it like that, we further the stigma that hurts those children.
A bill gets amended by Public Safety Chairman Mike Christian, which would, as opponents say, virtually nullify the Oklahoma Open Records Act. It passed out of committee, but the original author of the bill, Democratic freshman Claudia Griffith, says she will now not allow that bill to be heard on the House floor. Neva, what happened here?
Well, I think what happened is you had a couple of competing interests in the bill itself. This bill also had language in it that dealt with the dashboard cameras and body cameras used by law enforcement, and I think it was that element mixed into the bill that caused everybody to, you know, kind of put the skids on it, the bill to be basically taken back. And I think what we'll see is all of this extracted out and sorted through, no real action this year. And I think the issue of the Open Records Act, and really a bill that would bring it to its knees, as it's been described, and I think that's right. I mean, no one in their right mind, I think, politically or otherwise, wants to see this gutted. And frankly, when you had language in that that said that basically, you could have any public body determine that if it would cause, quote, excessive disruption, that they didn't have to comply. I mean, that's just ludicrous. Mm-hmm. So I think it's unfortunate. Again, we've got a lot of bills. I mean, we've talked about how many hundreds and hundreds of bills are flying through the process out there meeting the deadlines this week. And regrettably, it takes everybody kind of stopping and saying, whoa, I mean, do you really understand what's in this bill for people to get serious about taking it off the table?
Ryan.
I was having dinner with David Blatt with the Oklahoma Policy Institute the other night, and he said the last two groups that you want to pick a fight with at the state legislature are the media and parents of AP history students. And I think he's right. Yeah, and I think that it's good news that this bill is dead for this session. The loophole that it would have created would have essentially eliminated the Open Records Act. And as the director of an advocacy organization myself that relies on the Open Records Act quite a bit, it is very terrifying to see the transparency that we depend upon to hold our government accountable taken away. But at the end of the day, the idea of increased use of police body cameras, dashboard cameras, all of these things that allow us this greater access of government oversight, which we're largely in favor of, do need to be balanced with the idea of personal privacy and the individuals that those cameras are directed at. There are ways to balance that. It wouldn't have been accomplished in this bill, but there are ways, and the ACLU, I'd go to ACLU.org and you can look that up. We've got some draft models of how we can address those competing interests of government oversight and privacy.
And I think when you start talking about the cameras and all of the other questions that come out, I mean, the cost issue, the length of how long you're going to, you know, keep those particular tapes, all of the particulars, that's where it gets mired down very quickly. And it seems like when you make the sweeping, you know, kind of across the board first blush look, it seems simple. But when you get into the details, that's where we really find the difficulty for these lawmakers.
Well, and our lawmakers don't excel whenever nuance is introduced. I mean, that's the problem. If you've got a black and white issue, that's fine. But, you know, when we introduce nuance.
Have there been any of those yet out there?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Earlier this week, former U.S. Senator Tom Coburn visited the state capitol to push for a constitutional convention. Now, the convention would only be able to look at limiting the federal government and even possibly term limits on elected officials. Ryan, is this a good idea?
I think that the idea that we can limit what a constitutional convention would consider once it's convened is flawed. We would not be able to. Congress and state legislatures could do what they want to try to limit the scope of the Constitutional Convention. But everyone from former Supreme Court justices to legal scholars from the right and the left have argued that it would be a free-for-all. And it would be a free-for-all both in who attends, who votes, how the decisions about amending the Constitution would be made. We've had a Constitutional Convention in our country before, and it threw out the entire direction of amending the Articles of Confederation, and we ended up with our current Constitution. This could throw the entire country into legal turmoil, and I think that that's why you see folks like Representative Mike Ritz and myself opposed to the Constitutional Convention, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So would there be concern, I mean, even from conservatives, that you could throw out the First Amendment, you could throw out gun control, you could throw
Absolutely.
Out privacy.
And I think that, that's why you do have this wide spectrum of folks on both sides of the issue. I mean, Dr. Coburn, when he came in, I mean, he's a very persuasive, very articulate advocate on this issue. He's taking it kind of on the national tour to weigh in on this. And I think what we saw in the Senate committee this week is that Senator Standridge basically in that 8-5 vote, and I think the second vote was 7-6, getting those two particular things out of committee. What they really did was say, okay, in deference to our colleague, we're going to let them out of committee, but it's going to have a very difficult time making it any further. On the House side, Representative Vance, who is the House author, he's one of 14 legislators across the country who is involved in kind of this national movement as state legislators, Article 5 caucus committee members. And so he's been at the national, you know, forefront of this debate. So there are good people on both sides. And I think you get an interesting mix among Republicans because of the point you raise. You can't the probably the greatest concern is not being able to limit the purpose. And then for people, particularly those that are the Second Amendment folks, I mean, they're really concerned that this may open the door to really kind of taking that whole issue on. And then you have a lot of other, you know, have a lot of other folks that weigh in for other reasons. But, I mean, it's a debate that is a national debate. I think it is one that's going to continue to go on. I mean, we've had, I think, somewhere around 400 attempts through the decades to have a convention like this take place. It's never happened before, and I think Ryan's right. Being able, if we want to say, okay, we want to strictly adhere to the premise of we're going to deal with a balanced budget amendment, we're going to deal with presidential overreach and kind of that whole aspect, and then term limits, that may sound good, and you may have enough folks that would be really interested in those three issues, but this may not be the vehicle to get it there. So it'll be interesting to see, and I think it'll be a good, genuine debate on both sides, because I think the folks that have really weighed in really have some really good arguments for their point of view.
And if you open that door, if you look at 18th century, the way, you know, when we had our last constitutional convention in the 18th century, you look at the way politics is different now in the 21st century, super PACs, undisclosed money groups, the impact that money would have on a constitutional convention today, I think it should trouble folks on the right and the left.
Well, and also it's a lot easier to get something through a constitutional change when you've got 13 states rather than 50.
Absolutely. You know, if I were, if there were a constitutional convention open today, as much as I don't want that to happen, if it were open and I had an opportunity and my organization had an opportunity to influence the direction of that constitutional convention, you can bet we're going to try to be at the table. You know, we'll probably be outspent by the Koch brothers, but we'll try to be at the table.
Well, and I think, I mean, you've only had three states so far that have actually been able to pass a proposal like this. I mean, you've got Florida, Georgia, and Alaska. In their ambitious agenda, they'd like to see 20 states. They were hoping, you know, I think in their formula that Oklahoma would be one of those. I think that's very questionable at this point. And try to get the remaining dozen or so next year so that they could do this before the 2016 presidential election. I don't see any possibility of that kind of timeline being realistic. But I do think, again, it does elevate the debate on these issues that really, I think, are legitimate issues. And, you know, one of the points that I think the proponents of the convention have that is probably one of those that everyone almost without exception could nod their head on is that they say that by 2020, 89% of the federal budget will be consumed basically by interest on the national debt, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And if that number is anywhere near true, then we all, I think, would have to make the point that that's unsustainable. So we've got to do something. If this is not the course, there has to be some other course. States and the federal government are going to have to take a serious look at what they can do to get spending under control, particularly at the federal level.
The $611 million budget shortfall still looms over the heads of lawmakers, and now the finance secretary says agencies need to crack down on swag or promotional items. It was even mentioned during this week's On Tap, which is currently on our website at kosu.org. Secretary Preston Dorflinger says the state spends nearly $110 million in travel and more than $28 million in swag. Ryan, can all our problems be solved by cutting out travel expenses and swag?
You know, I don't think it can. It's certainly worthy of examination, and I think that we should be looking at it. But when you dig a little bit deeper into, you know, those travel expenses, what of those travel expenses are discretionary? What of them are necessary for the state to operate in a successful way? Then it becomes, you know, much more difficult. And I await a more detailed breakdown of what that travel actually is and where the state's actually spending those dollars before we can just say, hey, listen, we found a way to save $110 million. I think at the end of the day, we may find some savings there, and kudos to the folks involved in that. But we shouldn't immediately start running around thinking that we found $110 million in the couch cushions.
And travel expenses includes the lawmakers themselves. It also includes the Department of Transportation
and higher education.
And higher ed, which I think they said was two-thirds of that figure, which is a tremendous percentage without question. And I think here's the real issue. I mean, we're at the point now with a $600 million shortfall that we've got to really take a serious look at spending. And everyone says, well, a million here, a million there, 20 million, 10 million, that's really not going to have much, make much of a dent in it. But if we were a business and we were faced with mounting debt, shortfall, however you want to characterize it, we would have to make cuts. We would have to make deep changes, and we would have to make them fast. And we have still a mindset among lawmakers that belt tightening is for somebody else. And agencies, it's for some other agency, not ours, because ours is too important and our mission is too necessary. And so we can't do anything within the framework of even wanting to hold the line, much less come up with something where we're not still back asking for more. And I think we've got to change the mindset. And if the Republicans who have run for years and years and years saying that we want to right-size government, say we want to, you know, get government under control, do what is necessary, but get rid of the things that are not necessary, it, you know, let's ask the question on the travel and these types of expenditures. Are we sending one person from an agency or are we sending six? And if we're sending six, why? When one may very well be able to go advocate whatever needs to be advocated for, take the notes, come back and tell everyone else. And that's what we would do in private business. I mean,
those are the detailed questions we've got to get, because if we're running it like a business, we wouldn't look at a CEO's travel expenses and say, well, all of this is frivolous.
That's right.
I mean,
that's
some
right.
of it may be.
That's right.
But it, some of it may be necessary
that's,
to recruit
that's right.
customers.
And same and with other, advertising. Yeah. You know, well, there may be some legitimate advertising, but, it, you know, advertising on the OU football screen at a football game, is that for an agency? Is that proper advertising? I mean, there are a lot of things that have to be looked at. And I think that's where, rather than take these big numbers in a budget where they come in and say, okay, here's our sheet, here's how we spend our money, and here's why we need more, or here's why we can't take less, they have to get into the particulars, and they have to begin to not micromanage, but they've got to manage. They're the elected officials. They're the people responsible, not these people that are not elected, who are, you know, frankly, I think running amok in many instances, and we've got to get the waste and mismanagement under control.
Which is, again, why we could maybe need an entire session where we just focus on
Absolutely.
The budget.
Well, and yeah, I think that that's it. I think term limits play a big role in that, and you know, just the education about the budget process. You know, it takes a long time for lawmakers to get up to speed into how the budget works and how the
That's
state
right.
works.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that even at the end of 12 years, a majority of lawmakers, despite their best efforts, and you know, and I pan these folks a lot, but you know, there are some genuinely smart folks in the legislature. But even these, you know, very smart people at the end of 12 years, I don't think they have a full grasp on the budget, especially when you compare them to lobbyists and agency heads that have been around for decades.
And I think there's a natural predisposition to think, okay, Mr. Agency Head, Ms. Agency Head coming in, you're giving me, you know, accurate information, you're giving me the, you know, the right storyline here, and so I want to believe you. And so they give them a wide latitude on what they've been able to do in the past, and I think those days may be coming to a close if they want to be successful in really dealing with this budget.
There you go. And Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.